Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Twin Spires.
And with that, we welcome you to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Hard to believe it was 2004 when Dale Romans won the Whitney with Roses in May. Can't believe it's been 18 years. Going to talk to Dale and to Tim about their fondest memories of working with the Whitney family over the years. And in light of jockey Jose Ortiz making the decision to switch agents, we're going to look back on some of the most famous jockey-agent pairings, plus which jockey or trainer, not currently in the Hall of Fame, would you make the strongest case for getting in? We're going to talk about those topics and so much more on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin, all presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program in the College of Business. And it all starts just 30 seconds from right now.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 35 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
And before we kick things off with our Whitney topic, I have a very special treat for our man, Dale Romans, here this morning.
And yes, sir, General Sir's opening up. He's opening up. He's got a three-length lead at the quarter pole. Roses and May, second on the outside. Peace Rolls has dropped back. Perfect Drift on the far outside is coming on now. And Bowman's Band is there, too, into the final furlong. Nothing left for Yes, Sir, General Sir. Here's Roses and May. Here's Perfect Drift. Perfect Drift and Roses in May. Roses in May, unwavering determination. Perfect Drift is surging. Short lead. Roses in May, dead game. Here's the wire. Roses in May in a spectacularly game performance to win by a nose over Perfect Drift.
Man, what a renewal. 18 years ago, Dale. Do you believe it?
Unbelievable. Seems like yesterday. That was the first grade one I ever won.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Was it really?
Yes, that was it. And a week later, Kitten's Joy won the Secretariat. We won two in 2 weeks. It took 35 years to get that point and then won two back-to-back.
You know, and he didn't beat a bunch of slouches either. Perfect Drift, man. That horse was a runner.
He was a runner. One of my favorite all time. The Donna Former Gilding, he ran until he was like 8 years old and competed at the highest level the whole time.
Well, you know, the Whitney is such a great event. It's one of the centerpieces of the Saratoga season, and it's going to be run for the 95th time later today. And the race, of course, named for the family that for generations has had so much to do with racing at Saratoga. I know, Dale, that's a fond memory for you, but I want to start with you first, then we'll go to Timmy. Give us a memory that you have of dealing with the Whitney family.
Well, one of my best memories is how complimentary Mrs. Whitney was when she gave the trophy to us, and she had Susan Lucci with her, which I thought was pretty cool. And then we all went back to the director's room. Of course, it was my first grade one. I'm walking on cloud nine as it was, but then to hang out with Mrs. Whitney and Susan Lucci and drinking champagne together, and even though the hillbilly from Shively, Kentucky, she made me feel like a socialite for that day. And it was one of my fondest memories of the sport.
Wow. Timmy?
Well, you know, for some reason, Mary Lou Whitney liked me. She took a shine to me. And it was kind of cool that in the Albany Times Union back in the day when I was working there, we would have a guest handicapper in the paper every day. And Mrs. Whitney was the guest handicapper always on Whitney Day. And we always had a bet. If she beat me, which was more times than not, I would have to do something for her. And if I beat them, they would take me out to dinner. So one year, she cleaned my clock, and she said I had to go over and call Bingo over at the backstretch, one of the programs they did for, you know, the backstretch workers. So I had to go over there and call Bingo with Tom Durkin, and she made sure I was there because she was sitting in the front row for John and her dog Lulu, making sure I was there and just laughing at me the whole time, which I thought was hysterical. But one year I beat her, and John said, well, we're going to take you out to dinner. He said, we'll give you your choice. I'll give you $1,000, and you can go out to dinner with any of your friends, or you can go out with us. That was such an easy decision to make because you're darn sure I was going to go out to dinner with them, and we had a great time. You know, it was just so much fun with her, and she just up until the day she died, she was just a fun-loving person who was, you know, and you know, we could go on for hours about what she's done for the city of Saratoga Springs, but you know, she was a woman that really enjoyed the horses and and loved this town, but yeah, she's I'm sure she's one thing. When the day she passed away was on a Friday. The next day at Saratoga, they canceled racing because of the heat. It was almost like she was up in the heavens saying, well, if I can't be at the races, no one's going to be at the races today. I just thought that that was prophetic and, yeah, a great woman.
Great stories. Dale, you mentioned Roses in May in 04 being your first Grade 1 winner. You've won so many Grade 1s since that point. You know, when a hitter is in a slump in baseball and they finally break through, the hits just kind of keep coming like water. You weren't necessarily in a slump. You were just getting yourself to that point in your career. When you finally broke through with that first Grade 1, did you find that all of a sudden they just started to come maybe a little bit easier?
Everything's easier to do the second time, I find. You're right. That's 100%. It just became an easier thing. It's gotten a little tough the last couple of years, but I'm at the Yearly Sale right now looking for one for the future. But, yeah, it seemed like an impossible goal when I started out training cheap claiming horses coming from my father's stable, which was claiming horses, much respect to him, but it was just a claiming barn, and I would have been happy to have 10, 15 horses my whole life and feed my family. It's just unbelievable what's happened since Roses in May. Him and Kitten's Joy the same year came in the barn. One was older than the other, but Roses in May had missed his two-year-old year with an injury, and those two horses showed up in my barn and changed my life. And you know, Ken Ramsey always told me that I had the ability to win Grade Ones and just get out there and do it. And he gave me the confidence, and those two horses changed my life.
Yeah, and it sounds like Mrs. Whitney, Mary Lou Whitney, changed your life, Timmy.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I met Dale was during the Roses in May year. I had never met him before. I went over to his barn. I believe you were on the Oklahoma side then, Dale, weren't you?
We were, yes.
Yeah, and I went over there, and I met him for the first time, and, you know, the first time you meet Dale Romans, how can you not like him? And I'm not just saying that because he's sitting here on the dais with me. But, yeah, it was I never even heard of him, I don't think, because I'm just a hayseed from up north when the hillbilly comes north. So it was right. A good time.
We've been friends ever since.
That's right. That's right.
Well, all right. And, you know, always nice to reminisce on Whitney Day and remember Mary Lou Whitney and the impact she had and so many great stories there, guys. I really do appreciate it. Let's move on to topic number two. The annual Hall of Fame inductions were held in Saratoga yesterday, and this year's contemporary inductees did not include a trainer nor a jockey. My question to you is this. What one trainer or jockey currently not in the Hall of Fame would you make a case for getting into that Hall of Fame? Timmy?
You know, it's such a tough subject because there's so many people that are not in the Hall of Fame that should have consideration to be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm going to give you a jockey and a trainer who should have consideration to be in the Hall of Fame. First on the jockey side, I'm going to go with Richard Migliori, who for some reason, I don't know why, has never even been on the ballot. Yeah, true, he's never won a Triple Crown race, but he's got over 2,000 wins at Aqueduct, or 1,500 at Belmont, 365 at Saratoga, 25 Grade Ones, 400 stakes. And remember, he lost 37 months of his career to injury. I mean, and he had, you know, I think it was, he was the leading rider, either led or tied as the leading rider at 10 different meets at NYRA. I think that Richard Migliori's time is way overdue to be considered to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's a career. It's not winning one race, you know, not winning a Triple Crown race. You're a consistent winner your whole career. You should get some consideration. And I know it's going to sound you know, that I'm being a homer here, but why not give a little love to Dale? I mean, Dale's had a great career. He's won some big races. I mean, the ones we already mentioned, but he's also won the Preakness with Shackelford. And he took down a horse named American Pharoah with Keen Ice and the Travers. That in itself should get some consideration for the Hall of Fame. So I think Dale, who's just carved out a really, really good career in Kentucky, and whenever he chips out, he does well. I think he should get some consideration, too.
Now, that, with that being said, I want Tim to run for president, and I'm going to vote for him.
Well, thank you, Tim. I get one vote, then.
Yeah, you got one vote. I'm voting for you, and but appreciate it. But I'll say I want to give you two jockeys, and this is a touchy subject because Tim and I differ on this a little bit. He thinks that you have to be grade one winning trainer or jockey to get it. But I think if you're an impact on the game, you should get consideration. So there's a bunch of guys that you can go trainer-wise. Dale Beard won 10,000 races, even though Richard Hazelton, 8,000 races, even though most of them were claiming races. They were just in the game for a long time and had an impact on the sport. David Gall, the jockey. All those guys, in my opinion, should be considered. But the two I don't understand not being in are two jockeys, Corey Nakatani and Robbie Alvarado. I mean, you go back and look at their careers. Robbie rode two horse of the years, you know, $250 million in purses, two Triple Crown races, multiple Breeders' Cups, two for me. And he's been nominated but doesn't get voted in. And I think, you know, he had a rough spot at the end of his career with a couple with a divorce and different things that went on with him. But, I mean, I know him personally. I know him well. He's my friend. I know the circumstances behind all that. And none of that should come into play, in my opinion. It's what you did on the racetrack. He was a fabulous jockey with a fabulous career. And the same thing with Nakatani. I think that so many of the votes are based on the East Coast. And when he spent most of his career out west, people don't remember what a great rider he was and how many great races. Even though he never won a Triple Crown race, he won everything else. And he's won over $250 million in purses and probably 100 grade ones. And those two guys have both been nominated. And I thought they were cinches when they were nominated to get in the Hall of Fame. So hopefully they can still get some shots and try to get in. But it's a tough club to join.
I'll give you another one, too. How about David Hoffman's on the West Coast?
Perfect. Very good, man. I'll tell you, I shipped into his barn one time when I went out there, and such a gentleman. The only time I really met him was around him. He took such good care of us, and Tammy was there a week ahead of time. But he was a true horseman, 100%. He should be in.
Yeah.
So we could do the whole show talking about people who haven't been considered that should be.
Yeah, no Triple Crown victories for Dave Hoffman's. No, that's not true. He did win the Belmont Stakes with Touch Gold.
Touch
I'm wrong.
Gold.
He won with Touch Gold, denying Silver Charm. And you remember he beat Cigar with Alphabet Soup in the Breeders' Cup. I think he has three Breeders' Cup wins. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of credence for David Hoffman's getting in.
I would go for that. Open the door and let us all in. It's a hard job. For staying around for 30 years, you ought to get in.
Well, as the Dale Roman says, put them all in, right?
That's what I say. Heck, give us all a jacket to wear.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, hey, listen, as long as we're talking about the Hall of Fame, last week on the show I spent a lot of time talking about Kona Gold, who was among those not selected for the Hall of Fame class of 2022. He retired with 14 wins from 30 starts, nearly $2.3 million in earnings, competed in the Breeders' Cup Sprint five consecutive years, but somehow continues to be overlooked by voters when nominated to the Hall of Fame. So my question today is, guys, Dale, I'll go to you first. Why?
I don't know. Sprinters have always been overlooked in our game. If you're a miler, they love you. You got to be able to go at least a mile. But Kona Gold was a special horse. He had a special trainer. And any horse that's named after a strain of marijuana should get into the Hall of Fame, I think.
New criteria.
Exactly. Why not? That's one of the greatest names of all, I thought. Kona Gold. Everybody was famous. His trainer liked to partake a little bit, and that seemed to be his favorite strand, and he named a horse after it.
Timmy, follow that one.
Maybe that's why they didn't put him in. I don't know. Dale's right. I mean, it's for some reason sprinters, the voters seem to put their nose down on sprinters. It's like the, you know, you're not going to put the utility baseball player into the Hall of Fame. It's like if you're only sprinting, you got to do more. There's only really a handful of horses that are even in the Hall of Fame that are actual sprinters. I mean, because, you know, some of these other horses that did sprint also did it, went a distance of ground. I mean, it's Kona Gold, what he did, what he excelled at, he shouldn't be discriminated against to get in the Hall of Fame because, you know, he was very, very good at what he did. Yeah, he was a sprinter. So what? He was really good at as a sprinter. Will people have this same kind of opinion with Jackie's Warrior when he gets to be eligible to win the Hall of Fame, as phenomenal as he's been? Kona Gold has waited too long. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
A great analogy to Jackie's Warrior, too. Yeah. He certainly looks like a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
Sure does. Yeah. You know, sprints are the hardest races on a horse, and the most difficult races really to win, because those horses have to run from gate to wire the whole way. And you go around two turns, you run a mile and eighth, a mile and a quarter, you get a break in the race, you can overcome a little issue. When you're sprinting, they're hauling it from the time they leave the gate till they hit the wire at the highest level. And they should get a lot more respect, but for some reason, they don't. I'll give you another horse. Why isn't Kenneth Joy considered for the Hall of Fame? I think he's one of the top five sprinters in American – or turf horses in American history. Mm-hmm. And I think he should get consideration. And then did it as a stallion, too.
Well, don't you think turf horses – don't you think there's kind of a bias against turf horses just like sprinters? I mean, Gio Ponti,
like
I voted for him this year. I thought Gio Ponti was a shoo-in.
I agree. You know, our whole game is based around Triple Crown, but there's some great things that go on outside of the Triple Crown.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, another example, like when he becomes eligible, do you think Golden Pal would be put in? I mean, he's the dominant turf sprinter in the country, maybe the world. And will he be discriminated against when his career's over? He shouldn't be. For some reason, there just seems to be.
Will.
And not every voter, but a lot of voters just seem to just put the brakes on when they see a sprinter on the ballot, and I don't get it.
Yeah, almost like you have to do more if you're a sprinter, or you have to do more if you're a turf horse. You know, we saw Teppan get in. She did an awful lot, right? So you have to – it's almost like you have to go to a higher level if you're competing in those different divisions, right?
You have to be much more dominant in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're really good at what you do, I don't understand why they discriminate against you.
Right,
The horse just did everything he was supposed to do, and he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, earlier this week, jockey Jose Ortiz announced that he was splitting with his longtime agent Jimmy Riccio and pairing with Steve Rushing. That's going to start on August 17th. Jose and his brother Irad are now going to be represented by the same agent. Jose and Riccio have been together. They've been a team since 2012 when Jose began riding in the U.S. So, guys, I'm going to ask you, how important, number one, is an agent to jockey to is an agent to a jockey's business? And what are some of the best pairings that you have seen between a jockey and an agent? And Timmy, let's kick it off with you.
Well, I think the jockey agent is very important, and I'm sure Dale will be able to touch on a little bit more because he's got one in the family. But, you know, especially at Saratoga, you see jockey agents all over the backstretch every day, all morning long. And, you know, they're hustling to get mounts for their guys. And, you know, it's not like the Irad Ortizes of the world, the Jose Ortizes, the Johnny V's. They're all out. Their agents are all out there hustling to get them the best possible mounts that they can. This game is what have you done for me lately? And these guys really have to hustle. These guys get on horses in the morning. They have to prove themselves every day. And as far as, you know, some of the best that I've seen and heard of, and, you know, right now I would think Ron Anderson has to be, you know, he's the creme de la creme. I would think, you know, the people that he represents, he has John Velasquez and Joel Rosario. He had Jerry Bailey. He had Gary Stevens. He's had plenty of all-star, you know, riders that he's covered in his career. And even Angel Cordero, after he ended his career, he was a longtime agent for John Velasquez. And if you go way, way back, I mean, the guy named Harry Silbert, who was with Arcaro and shoemaker Billy Hartack, obviously, that was way before me. But, I mean, you can go down the list. Pat Day's agent, Doc Danner, Jerry Hissom with Burrell, and, you know, Fred Amy also with Pat Day. There's just so many of them. And I guess you have to have a certain rapport with trainers to be – you got to get – these trainers have to trust them. And Dale could probably – expand on that more, but I have such an appreciation for what these guys do. It's not like they're just sitting in an office. They're out there doing a lot of legwork every single day.
Yeah, that's agent is important to a jockey's career, very important. And it's not an easy job if you do it right. There's a couple of different types of agents. There's the guys that can take a number 10 jockey in the country and make him number one. I think Ron Anderson's the best at that. There's the guys that can take a bug boy and start him out and get him business and get him going. It might not take him to the highest level. But it's a tough job. A lot of my peers look down on agents because they have to deal with them. They're probably a little bit jealous. They're making all the money and all they have invested is a pink pen. But I watch my son, and he works hard at it. It's not an easy job. And the elites make a whole lot of money. All of them make a decent living, but the elites make a whole lot of money. But I'll tell you some of the best agent-jockey combinations are. You know, Perry Utes is still riding at 60 years old. I think he's only had one agent in his career. Jamie's been with him around River Downs and the Chief Tracks his entire life. Early Fires with Paul Blair. A 40-year career from the time he was a bug boy. I only had one. And believe me, it's hard to keep the little fellas happy because every one of them is a little bit high-strung. They're all hungry, and literally. And they all want to win. And they used to say that the Saratoga was the merry-go-round. At the end of Saratoga, there would be major changes in agents and jockeys because one of them didn't do as good as he thought. And when one was gone, the domino effect would fall. And when they'd come out of Saratoga, they'd all have different jockeys. But it's a very honorable profession. It's a tough job to have. You got to keep the jockeys happy. Angel and I were out the other night, and we were talking about being an agent. And he was telling me a story. I won't tell you the jock's name, but that didn't show up for a work. So he said, instead of throwing him under the bus and getting fired, I had to go tell Wayne Lucas that it was my fault. I forgot to tell our mom. He said, I set my alarm for PM instead of AM. Made up an excuse for why the jockey didn't show up to work one. So they just take all the bullets for their riders. And it's an honorable profession, and it's a tough job. I mean, Riccio getting fired. If Riccio can get fired from a guy he won 3 Eclipse Awards with, there's less job security being an agent than there is a trainer.
Yeah, it's a great point. All right, we're down to about the final 2 minutes here, guys. I want to make sure we leave enough time for our West Point of the Week, which will give you guys the opportunity to throw in one parting shot. That means we're not going to get to our food topic for this week, which Timmy came up with this one. I really liked it. It's National Mustard Day. What is the best food that goes with mustard? So I'm just going to answer that for you guys. Next to pickles and cucumbers, mustard may be one of the most disgusting things ever created. So nothing goes with mustard. All right. Moving on, wow. It's time now for the West Point of the Week, and it is all presented by West Point Thoroughbreds. Experience the lifestyle of thoroughbred racehorse ownership with the gold standard in racing partnerships for over 30 years. It is West Point Thoroughbreds. You can text HORSE to 66866 to learn about ownership. That's HORSE to 66866 to learn about ownership with West Point Thoroughbreds. Do it now. Message and data rates may apply. All right, guys, time for one parting shot. What is your West Point of the Week? Timmy, why don't you kick it off?
My West Point of the Week is that it's too dang hot up here in Saratoga. I mean, I know it's summer, and I know it's Saratoga, but, you know, this is like the sixth day in a row we've had 90-plus temperatures, and I'm sick of it. That's all I have to say about that.
Dale?
All right, I got a little different viewpoint of it. I'm sitting here at the sales right now watching the yearlings in the future of horse racing. Trying to buy a few, and I'm looking at the stalls that's got the names of the great horses that have been sold out of these stalls over the years. And it makes me think about, since it's Whitney Day, the founding fathers of our sport, whether it be the Whitney family, the Phipps family, the Vanderbilt family, Jack Dreyfus. You know, it used to be a game of sport of kings where those families owned all the horses, and they put the foundation in place for our game. It's no longer really just a sport of kings. It's a sport of syndicates, and the average man can get in, but we all need to take a minute and remember the ones that came before us and laid the groundwork for this great sport.
Yeah, great, great, great West Point of the Week, Dale. And Timmy, appreciate it, my friend. Guys, great stuff. We're back again next week. We'll do it all over again.
Sounds good.
All right. That's I Ask, They Answer, presented by the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program and the College of Business. I am back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.